Chapter 12. Kids. Landon and I had often talked about it, but we never had a fourth. When Jenny came along, I was 42, and that, I figured, was it. On the occasion of our last attempt to induct Friday into the Chrono Guard's Academy of Time, he was the eldest at 16, Tuesday was 12, and Jenny, the youngest, was 10. I resisted naming Jenny after a day of the week. I thought at least one of us should have the semblance of normality. I arrived at Tuesday's school at 3:50 and waited patiently outside the math room. She'd shown a peculiar flair for the subject all her life, but had first achieved prominence when aged 9. She'd wandered into the sixth form math room and found an equation written on the board, thinking it was homework. But it wasn't. It was Fermat's last theorem, and the math master had written it down to demonstrate how this simple equation could not be solved. The thing was, Tuesday had found a solution, thus rendering a proof of the unworkability of the equation both redundant and erroneous. When the hunt was on for the person who had solved it, Tuesday thought they were angry with her for spoiling their fun, so she wasn't revealed as the culprit for almost a week. Even then, she had to be cajoled into explaining the answer. Professors of mathematics had tubed in from every corner of the globe to see how such a simple solution could have been staring them in the face without any of them noticing it. At 4 on the button, Tuesday came out of the math class looking drained and a bit cross. "Hi, sweetheart," I said. "How was school?" "It's okay," she said with a shrug, handing me her Hello Kitty school bag, pink raincoat, and half-empty Winnie the Pooh lunchbox. "Do you have to pick me up in your Acme uniform? It's, like, so embarrassing." "I certainly do," I replied, giving her a big, smoochy kiss to embarrass her further. Something that didn't really work, as the pupils in her math class were all grown up, and too obsessed with number sets and parameterized elliptic curves to be bothered by a daughter's embarrassment over her mother.
"They're all a bit slow," she said as we walked to the van. "Some of them can barely count."
"Sweetheart, they are the finest minds in mathematics today. You should be happy that they're coming to you for tutoring. It must have been a bit of a shock to the mathematics fraternity when you revealed that there were 16 more odd numbers than even ones."
17, she corrected me. "I thought of another one on the bus this morning." "The odd-even disparity is the easy bit," she explained. "The hard part is trying to explain that there actually is a highest number, a fact that tends to throw all work regarding infinite sets into a flat spin."
Clearly, the seriously smart genes that Mycroft had inherited from his father had bypassed my mother and me, but appeared in Tuesday. It was odd to think that Mycroft's two sons were known collectively as the Stupids, and it wasn't an ironic title either. Tuesday groaned again when she saw we were driving home in the Acme Carpets van, but agreed to get in when I pointed out that a long walk home was the only alternative. She scrunched down in her seat so as not to be spotted. We didn't go straight home. I'd spoken to Spike before leaving work, and he mentioned that he had some news about Mycroft's haunting and agreed to meet me at Mum's. When I arrived, she and Polly were in the kitchen, bickering about something pointless, such as the average size of an orange. So I left Tuesday with them, Mother to burn her a cake, and Polly to discuss advanced Nextian geometry. "Hiya," I said to Spike, who'd been waiting in his car.
"Yo, thought about what to do with Felix 8?
"Not yet. I'll interview him again later this evening."
"As you wish. I made a few inquiries on the other side. Remember my dead partner, Chesney? He said Mycroft spooking was what we call a non-recurring informative phantasm."
"You have them categorized?"
"Sure. The A-list contains pointless screamer, crisis warner, murder avenger, and recurrent dreary. From there, it's all downhill. Poltergeists, faceless orbs, quasi-religious visions, and phantom smells, more usually associated with recently departed pet Labradors.
We walked up the garden path to Mycroft's workshop. I get the picture.
So, what does it all mean?
I asked.
It means that Mycroft had something he wanted to say before he died, but didn't manage to. It was obviously important enough for him to be given a license to come back, if only for a few hours. Turn off your cell phone.
I reached into my pocket and did as he asked.
Radio waves scrambled their energy field, he explained. Spookings dropped big time since the cell phone network kicked in. I'm amazed there are any ghosts left at all.
Ready?
Ready.
We had arrived at my uncle's workshop, and Spike grasped the handle and gently pushed the door open. If we were hoping to find Mycroft standing there in all his spectral glory, we were disappointed. The room was empty.
He was just over there.
Spike closed his eyes, sniffed the air, and touched the workbench.
Yeah, he said. I can feel him.
Can you?
No, not really.
Where was he again?
At the worktop.
Spike, what exactly is a ghost?
A phantom, said my Uncle Mycroft, who had just materialized. Is essentially a heteromorphic wave pattern that gains solidity when the apparition converts thermal energy from the surroundings to visible light. It's a fascinating process, and I'm amazed no one has thought of harnessing it. A holographic TV that could operate from the heat given off by an average-sized guinea pig.
I shivered. Mycroft was right. The temperature had dropped. And there he was, but a lot less solid than the previous time. I could easily see the other side of the workshop through him.
Hello again, Thursday, he said. Good afternoon, Mr. Stoker.
Good afternoon, sir, replied Spike.
Word in the realm of the dead says you've got something to tell us.
I have? Asked Mycroft, looking at me.
Yes, Uncle, I told him.
You're a non-recurring informative phantasm, put in Spike helpfully.
An NIP, or what we call in the trade, speak up and shut down.
It means, Uncle, I said, that you've got something really important to tell us. Mycroft looked thoughtful for so long that I almost nudged him before I realized it would be useless.
Like what? He said at last.
I don't know. Perhaps a philosophy of life or something?
Mycroft looked at me doubtfully and raised an eyebrow.
The only thing that springs to mind is you can never have too many chairs.
That's it?
You returned from the dead to give me advice on furniture distribution?
I know, it's not much of a philosophy, said Mycroft with a shrug, but it can pay dividends if someone unexpectedly pops around for dinner.
Uncle, please try to remember what it is you have to tell us.
Was I murdered or anything? He asked in a dreamy fashion. Ghosts often come back if they've been killed or something. At least, Patrick Swayze did.
You definitely weren't murdered, I told him. It was a long illness.
Then this is something of a puzzle, murmured Mycroft. But I suppose I've got the greater part of eternity to figure it out.
That's what I liked about my uncle. Always optimistic. But that was it. In another moment, he had gone.
33 seconds, said Spike, who had put a stopwatch on him, and about 55% opacity.
He flicked through a small book of tables he had with him.
Hmm, he said at last. Almost certainly a tri-visitation. You've got him one more time. He'll be down at 15 to 20% opacity, and we'll only be around for about 15 seconds.
Then I could miss him.
No, said Spike with a smile. He appeared to you twice out of twice. The final appearance will be to you too. Just have a proper question ready for him when you next come here. Mycroft's memory being what it is, you can't rely on him remembering what he came back for. It's up to you.
Thanks, Spike, I said, as I closed the door of the workshop. I owe you.
Tuesday and I were home in a few minutes.
The house felt warm and comfy, and there was the smell of cooking that embraced me like an old friend. "Hi, darling," I called out. Landon stopped his typing and came out of the office to give me a hug.
"How was work?" he asked.
I thought of what I'd been doing that day, of firing and not firing my drippy alter ego, of a super reader loose somewhere in the book world, of Goliath's unwelcome intrusion, and of Mycroft as a ghost. Then there was the return of Felix VIII, the Minotaur, and my bag of Welsh cash. The time for truth was now. I had to tell him. I had to do a stair carpet over in Baden. Hell on earth, the treads were all squiffy. None of the stair rods would fit, and Spike and I spent the whole afternoon on it. How's the book going? He kissed me on the forehead and tousled Tuesday's hair affectionately, then took me by the hand and led me into the kitchen, where there was a stew on the stove.
"Kind of okay, I guess," he replied, stirring the dinner. "But nothing really spectacular."
"No ideas?" I prompted. "An odd character, perhaps?"
"No. I was mostly working on pace and atmosphere."
This was strange. I'd specifically told Scampton Tappet to do his best. I had a sudden thought. "What book are you working on, sweetheart?"
"The Muse of Doom."
"Aha. I thought you said you'd be rewriting Bananas for Edward."
"I got bored with it. Why do you ask?"
"No reason. Where's Friday?"
"In his room. I made him have a shower, so he's in a bit of a snot."
Plock. "A clean snot is better than a dirty snot, I suppose. And Jenny?"
"Watching TV."
I called out, "Hey, Jenny!" But there was no answer.
Plock. "She's upstairs in her room."
I looked at the hall clock. We still had a half hour until we had to go to the Chrono Guard's career advisory presentation.
Plock.
"Yes, yes, hello, Pickwick. How's this?" I showed her the finished blue and white sweater, and before she could even think of complaining, I had slipped it over her featherless body. Landon and I stared at her this way and that, trying to figure out if it was for the better or the worse.
"It makes her look like something out of the Cornish Blue Pottery Catalogue," said Landon at last.
"Or a very large licorice allsort," I added. Pickwick glared at us sullenly, then realized she was a good deal warmer, and hopped off the kitchen table and trotted down the corridor to try to look in the mirror, which was unfortunately just too high. So she spent the next half hour jumping up and down, trying to catch a glimpse of herself.
"Hi, Mum,"
said Friday, looking vaguely presentable as he walked down the stairs. "Hello, Sweet Pea," I said, passing him the CD Polly had given me. "I got this for you. It's an early release of Hosing the Dolly. Check out the guitar riff on the second track."
"Cool,"
replied Friday, visibly impressed in a nothing impresses me sort of way.
"How did you get hold of it?"
"Oh, you know," I said offhandedly. "I have friends in the recording industry. I wasn't always just a boring mum, you know."
"Polly gave it to you, didn't she?"
I sighed. "Yes. Ready to go?" Landon joined us, and he and I moved toward the door. Friday stood where he was.
"Do I have to?"
"You promised, and there isn't another Chrono Guard career advisory meeting in Swindon for another 6 months."
"I don't want to work in the time industry."
"Listen," I said, my voice rising as I finally lost patience, "get your lazy butt out the door, okay?" He knew better than to argue with the angry, determined mum. Landon knocked on the partition wall, and a minute later our neighbour, Mrs. Burko Boiler, was on the doorstep, wearing a pink quilted dressing gown, her hair in curlers. "Good evening, Mrs. Burko Boiler," I said.
"Is it?"
she said with a snarl.
"Is it really?"
"We'll be about an hour," explained Landon,
who was more skilled at dealing with our volatile yet oddly helpful neighbour.
"Do you know the last time Mr. Burko Boiler took me out anywhere?" she asked, scowling at all three of us.
"I've no idea."
"Saturday."
"Well, that's not
that long ago. Saturday, October the 6th, 1983, she said, with a contemptuous sniff, and shuffled past us into the living room. 19 years ago. Makes me sick, I tell you. Hello, Tuesday, she said, in a kindlier tone. Where's your sister?
We walked down to the tram stop in silence. Friday's lack of interest in the Chrono Guard was a matter not only of annoyance, but surprise. The Standard History event line had him joining the industry 3 years ago on their Junior Time Scout program, something that he had failed to do despite our efforts and those of the Chrono Guard, which was as concerned as we were. But we couldn't force him either. Time was the glue of the cosmos and had to be eased apart. Push destiny too hard, and it had an annoying habit of pushing back. He had to join the Chrono Guard, but it had to be his decision. Every way you looked at it, time was out of joint.